On my website, harrisonline.com, I have a thing called Picture of the Day. Some of them serious, some of them comic, some of them absolutely bizarre. And it's one of the most popular things on my site and on the internet, the Picture of the Day on harrisonline.com. One of the things I'm going to have to do is get a picture of my next guest, sumo wrestling. His name is Joshua Davis. He is not a professional sumo wrestler. In fact, he doesn't look anything like a sumo wrestler. Well, he looks like about a tenth of a sumo wrestler, to be honest with you. But he went out and did that, and bullfighting, and competitive arm wrestling, and so many more. In each of these, he was the underdog, and that's why he's called his book, The Underdog. And I've invited him on the show today to talk about these rather outlandish things that he has tried to do. Welcome to KMOX, Joshua.
Thank you, Paul.
How much were you outweighed by in the sumo ring?
Usually by quite a bit. Just to give your listeners some context, I'm about 5'9" and 128 pounds, 129 on a good day. So the guys I was going up against were anywhere, I mean, the maximum was probably a little over 500 pounds. I wrestled a guy named Big T at the U.S. Sumo demonstration event in Washington, D.C., and I actually beat him once, but he was... I think I caught him off guard. He was not looking at me or something.
Yeah, well, maybe they hadn't started the fight yet.
They probably hadn't started the fight.
You know, one of the amazing things about these pictures, in fact, it's the picture on the front cover, is when you bend over into the sumo position, you can put your hands on the ground. They barely get their hands down to their knees.
That's true. I mean, the guy's enormous. He weighs, what, he's three or four times my weight.
Yeah.
But there are strategies. You know, you can learn how to at least give yourself as much of a chance as you could possibly have. Like, with a guy like Big T, you don't go right at him. You maybe attack his leg, because his leg, if you can get it off the ground, is, for one, lighter than his whole body, and then it also destabilizes him.
Yeah.
Which is, you got to be careful about getting crushed, because if it falls on you, you're toast.
That, yeah, it's like knocking down a tree in the forest.
Oh,
You want to make sure you're on the right side when that thing comes down, because otherwise, that's pretty much it.
No, I got a lot of big guys, you know, crushing me and pummeling me, and, you know, when they attack you, you know, I got contusions all over my body from these, from getting hit.
One last sumo question. Are you allowed to grab by that diaper?
You are. Yeah, that's the main area where you know, when you're wrestling, they call it the belt, and you grab the belt. I call it the diaper.
Yeah.
Because it looks like a diaper.
Because you're like me, you're not a sumo wrestler.
Well, you know, I basically became one, though, and I mean, that's what I talk about in my book, is that I got involved in these various sports, and I came into them with no prior knowledge of what it took to be either a sumo wrestler or a backwards runner, but I devoted 6 months to a year of my life to each of them and tried as best I could to become a sumo wrestler or the world's greatest, you know, arm wrestler.
Yeah. Now, the men who are listening in here will be no less surprised than I was to hear the reason why you did this. It was to impress a female.
To impress my wife, basically. She, about 3 years ago, I wasn't doing so well in my career, and she was, my wife, Tara, was basically supporting us. And she told me that she wanted to go back to school, so now was the time for me to kind of step up to the plate and do my part for the family.
And you thought, I see huge money in sumo wrestling.
Well, I came across a flyer for the U.S. National Arm Wrestling Championship, and it said, anybody can compete. And I thought, well... You know, I mean, I wasn't doing. I was a data entry specialist, and which meant I typed numbers into a computer. And I thought, well, maybe if I come home with like an arm wrestling medal, you know, that'll impress her, and she'll, you know, get off my back for a little bit.
The things we do for women.
Well, and it worked, actually. That's kind of what got me started on this whole thing. Is that I actually ended up placing fourth in the U.S. as a lightweight arm wrestler.
Now, wait a second. I've read your book, and so it's not quite as impressive as you make it sound here.
Well, what do you mean?
How many people entered in your division?
Paul, you're spilling the beans here.
How many entered, Josh?
There were only four.
There you go.
I was fourth out of four, but listen, I won a medal.
Let's be honest, I was fifth.
No, you weren't there.
I was fifth out of four. I mean, well, you just barely beat me, is my point.
I didn't beat anyone. I lost all my matches, but since there were only, you know, three other competitors, I got fourth place.
Yeah, and when the woman calls out the awards at the end of the night and says your name, you're completely shocked. I love that in the book.
I was getting ready to get back in the car and tell my wife that, you know, at least I didn't get my arm broken. And then they called me to the stage and told me that I'm an alternate for the U.S. National Arm Wrestling Team. And when numbers 2 and 3 ended up not being able to go, they had to invite me to the World Arm Wrestling Championship.
And so there you were in Poland, and as a representative of your country, the second best in your division.
Exactly. I wrestled the Russian Ripper, one of the Russian champions.
Now, all I know about arm wrestling is it hurts if you lose, and Sylvester Stallone made a horrible movie about it. What do you know about arm wrestling that I don't?
Well, once I placed fourth, you know, I didn't deserve to place fourth, and I was committed to deserving to be part of Team USA. You know, I wasn't doing this just to laugh. I really actually was impressed with the sport and impressed with the people who were wrestling and how seriously they took it and spent, you know, 10, 15 hours a week training. And so I went to Houston to train with the current heavyweight world champion. And I learned all about the strategy of arm wrestling, the inside move, the outside move, over the top. You know, there is, it's almost in some senses like poker, because you have to size up your opponent and kind of get into their head and decide what strategy they're going to use against you, and then come at them with what you think they won't be expecting. So it's a surprising sport. People don't think of arm wrestling as being cerebral. But it can be, and that's kind of what I found out and write about in my book.
Yeah, using your brain all that much, though, still doesn't stop it from hurting a heck of a lot when they pound your wrist down onto that pad, right?
Well, nor does it help. I mean, I placed 17th in the world, but that was out of 18 this time. And the 18th guy didn't show up. So I actually, you know, all my thinking didn't really, you know, pan out for me so well.
But at least you didn't get your arm broken.
I did not get my arm broken, and yeah, I've got medals on my wall. And I still have never won a competitive arm wrestling match.
I
came home, and my wife was impressed.
It's News Talk 1120 KMOX, the Paul Harris Show. Joshua Davis is the underdog. He was going into all these various outlandish competitions that he went into. We've talked about sumo wrestling. We've talked about arm wrestling. Why would you try to be a bullfighter?
Well, I actually, when I got back from the World Arm Wrestling Championship, I went to, on my wife's insistence, to see a job counselor. Because obviously, I wasn't going to keep on arm wrestling. I didn't want to be like Michael Jordan and kind of stick around past my prime.
By the way, is there money in arm wrestling?
A little bit, but it's almost impossible to be a full-time professional. But it's growing. I mean, it's now getting some more TV coverage. It's getting a little more respect. I think people are realizing that it's not just a barroom thing. It's actually a sport with some fantastic athletes.
I think we're stretching the definition of sport and fantastic athletes there, but nonetheless, go on to bullfighting.
Well, you know, so it wasn't enough of a job qualification to impress the job counselor, who got a little frustrated with me, and he said, well, you could be a rodeo clown, you could be a bullfighter. And the bullfighter thing kind of set off a light bulb in my head, and I did a little research and found out that first of all, that the serious bullfighters in Spain clear over $500,000 a year.
Yeah.
And you get to work outside, and it's the hours are pretty good. So I entered a bullfighting academy. There's actually a bullfighting academy in California.
What's the first thing they teach you?
Don't run away.
Don't run away.
Don't run away, because the bull, first of all, your back will be to the bull, and the bull will run faster than you, and it'll get you in the butt.
Okay.
So don't run away was the first thing I learned.
And that, again, is how you end up on the Picture of the Day page, because somebody always has that picture of the bull getting you in the butt.
Right. So, and actually, the second thing they taught me was go right at the bull. So the first thing is you have to master your fear about not running away, and the second thing is you actually have to kind of conquer the fear and approach the bull. And so I trained in San Diego and then fought some bulls in Mexico and actually got a bullfighting manager to sign me and take me to Spain to join the bullfighting circuit.
Did you like it?
I did. The life of a bullfighter in Spain, there's a lot of travel involved, but it's also, you know, it's an exciting life. You get to wear these crazy clothes, and all the women swoon. And
I was going to say, I hear that the women absolutely. I was at a bullfight in the mid-70s in Mexico City, and the women just go crazy for these guys. It's unbelievable.
Well, it's because you're wearing this outrageously tight pair, you know, pair of pants, and this jacket that's all full of sequins, and you get to strut around and fight a giant animal, and for whatever reason, that really, you know, connects with the ladies.
Did it impress your wife?
It did. Yeah. No. I mean, she still asked me to put on my outfit. I have it hanging in my closet.
And do you, because you're a married guy, have to say, "Okay, honey," but of course, you're not nearly as big as the bulls I was fighting.
I actually made her be the bull sometimes in the park when I was training, because a lot of the time, you know, you can't always train with a bull. So you have somebody kind of put their fingers on their head and run at you. And so Tara, my wife, did that a bunch of times. I kind of got all my friends to do it. They thought I was cracked.
Uh-huh.
But it helps. You know, it just helps you get a sense of the cape and how to use the cape. And
so why is it that you're not a professional bullfighter today, Josh?
Well, I thought this was right before the war in Iraq, and I made a judgment call that the Spaniards would be very interested to see an American bullfighter basically get his butt kicked in the ring.
Uh-huh.
But I ended up kind of being better than I expected. I did quite well in my fights in the Spaniard, but I wasn't as good as a full-time Spanish matador, and so I was in this strange middle ground, and I just didn't make enough money.
Gotcha.
And the nice thing about it was that what it did do for me was that it impressed some editors at various magazines in New York and in California. And when the war started to look like it was really going to happen, Wired magazine asked me to be their war correspondent.
And you actually spent some time in Iraq.
I was their guy on the front line, and I think they thought that if I was crazy enough to get into a bull ring and try to make that a life, then I could probably be counted on to survive a war.
That is an experience we'll have to talk about next time, in addition to the family sauna concept, which you write about in the book, and other things. Do you see yourself as kind of a modern-day George Plimpton now, or are you going to go on and do more of these rather offbeat competitions?
Well, I'm certainly honored when people say that. Plimpton was always an inspiration to me with Paper Lion, and on the other hand, I also feel like I've kind of, I feel like I've gotten, to some extent, I've gotten these things out of my system, you know, and my wife is certainly not looking forward to me continuing doing them, and she wants us to have kids, and she wants to have a more stable life, and she doesn't really want to be married to a bullfighter / arm wrestler / backwards runner.
But, if you do want to go with the Paper Lion route, I'm pretty sure I can get you a job on the Rams special teams. Doesn't seem to be any special qualifications for doing that job right now, so you fit right in.
Yeah, you're telling me.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this is what I talk about in the book, is how do you kind of build a life that's exciting and interesting, and you try to find a job that you like, and at the same time, keep your wife happy and have a family, and that's what The Underdog is all about.
Yeah, it's a great read, and I appreciate talking to you today. I'll have to have you back next time you get involved in some more wacky adventures.
Oh, okay, I'd love that, Paul.
Thanks for your time today. Joshua Davis, How I Survived the World's Most Outlandish Competitions. The book is called The Underdog. It's the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.